And wonderful to have all of the voices. I appreciate Karen and Connie's tune because I was going to read the poem. Now I don't have to because you sang it. I know. Oh, I probably have that here, but you get the drift. I have another poem by Joy Atkinson, so I'll share that one. How's that? The womb of stars embrace us, and the remnants of fiery furnace, its pulse runs through our veins. We are of the stars, the dust of the explosions cast across space. We are of the earth. We breathe and live in the breath of ancient plants and beasts. Their cells nourish the soil. We build communities on their harvest of gifts. Our fingers trace the curves carved in clay and in stone by forebearers unknown to us. We are part of the great circle of humanity, gathered around fire, hearth, altar. We gather again this day to celebrate our common heritage of earth and sky. May we recall in gratitude all that has given us birth. Excuse me while I kiss the sky. Actually, that last one I added. I don't know where that came from. So, I have about 18 pages here, but I'm not going to go through all 18 pages. Over the last week, I copied this off because I just want to... We're all being educated, aren't we? Isn't this an education? In fact, what in the world on we're celebrating environmental awareness today. Now, Earth Day was in April, but I was bumped from the pulpit because a neutered minister came and shared the pulpit. So it was a little bit awkward. Now, we had to move it to the first Sunday. And so this is Environmental Awareness Sunday. And of all things, to have environmental awareness on this particular day, because we've had quite a week, haven't we? It's been quite a week. Now, I didn't know a lot about it, and maybe you do, and you can educate me, but I always like to go and look up stuff. Climate Agreement. But in Paris, it's called the Paris Climate Accord, which is basically agreement. It's the French word, Accord de Paris. And I do not speak French, so this is going to be in English. The United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, UNFCCC, dealing with greenhouse gas emissions mitigation, adaptation, and finance starting in the year 2020. The language of the agreement was negotiated by representatives of 196 countries at the 21st Conference of the Parties of the UNFCCC in Paris and adopted by consensus on the 12th of December 2015. As of June 2017, yes, 195 members have signed the agreement, 148 have ratified it. Now, in the Paris Agreement, each country determines its own contribution it should make in order to mitigate global warming. There is no mechanism to force a country to set a specific target by any specific date. I just think this is absolutely interesting, but it allows each country to create its own agenda. Countries furthermore aim to reach global peaking of greenhouse gas emissions as soon as possible. The agreement has been described as an incentive for and driver of fossil fuel divestment. The Paris deal is the world's first comprehensive climate agreement, and it has to do with the principle of progression. There will be no mechanism to force any country. It's a name and encourage plan, as the agreement provides no consequences if countries do not meet their commitments. Consensus of this kind, it's fragile. A trickle of nations exiting the agreement may trigger the withdrawal of more governments, bringing about the total collapse of the agreement. Paris Agreement has a bottom-up structure in contrast to most international environmental law treaties, which are top-down. The Paris Agreement, with its emphasis on consensus building, allows for voluntary and nationally determined targets. The specific climate goals are thus politically encouraged rather than legally bound. China is the one that has the greatest commitment, 20% percentage of greenhouse gases. And guess who number two is? The United States, with 17, almost 18%. The countries that have not participated, Nicaragua and Syria. Nicaragua, why didn't they sign it? They criticized the Paris Agreement for not punishing countries who didn't follow it. Did you know that? That's why they wouldn't sign it. Syria is in the midst of a civil war, so they didn't have time to even attend. It went into effect on the 4th of November in 2016, and of course we had an election 4 days later, so that's kind of interesting, but it is in force until 2020 on November 4th. But it's not forced. Any other questions? I feel like I'm giving a presentation. I think that when some of these world events happen, especially when it has to do with environment, we should be, you know, talking about it and a little more interested. And of all things, it does have to do somewhat with the sermon, which, by the way, I started writing a week ago, so it's been through a number of changes. I worked and worked to try to find a lot of jokes, Jewish jokes, and the one I found, Catherine won't let me share with you. Thank you, Catherine. So I won't. She said it'll get me in trouble. Like, that's never happened before. Sometimes I'm seeing red, and it's not just Lowell and Robin. I think all of you are probably seeing red right now, too. Are you? I was informed this past week that today is Pentecost Sunday. Oh, I should be wearing red, right, Lowell? Good point. I left it in the closet. As a congregationalist, you know, they kind of moved away from all of that stuff, and so I guess I'm stuck in it. Therefore, you have to lead me on. But whenever I think of red, I think of the Pentecost and the tongues of fire and the Holy Spirit coming down into all of the people and being a part of the apostles and moving out and spreading the new religion of Christianity. And whenever I think of Pentecost, I also think of another poem as ballast for the earlier poem by Joy Atkinson. This one is by Robert Frost. Some say the world will end in fire. Some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I'll hold with those who favor fire. But if it had to perish twice, I think I know enough of hate to say that for destruction, ice is also great and would suffice. Robert Frost, he paints this poem around Earth's eventual destruction by fire or ice through the desire and hate embedded in human beings. Why can't we love, and why can't we forgive each other? Why can't we learn to live side by side with one another, despite our differences? I kept asking that question in a movie I was watching last night here in Cadillac, Wonder Woman. Come to bring peace, but all this destruction in the Great War. Wonder Woman. I kept asking that question last Thursday night. attending a very loud concert, ZZ Top. I can't hear myself think. Why can't we care enough for one another? Why can't we care for the land and the water and the earth and the sky, all of our environment, making life on this planet possible? Just this week's programming on the radio, besides the Paris Agreement decision, spoke of the neglect and the decay and the rot of the Great Barrier Reef off the east coast of Australia, and the melting occurring in Glacier National Park in northern Montana, alongside the vast amounts of money we are pouring into missile programs to counterattack those anticipated to be launched by nefarious forces, those forces in Korea, Russia, North Korea or Russia. I ask myself, what insanity has brought us to this point, and how can any of us claiming to be followers of Jesus use his life and ministry as an argument for violence rather than for love and forgiveness? As many of you already know, my ancestors, they're Scottish. I am pleased to say that my Scottish heritage, it speaks highly of the relationship between human beings and the earth and the creatures of the earth. In Scottish Celtic Christianity, we have Saint Ninian of Scotland, who declared the result of all spiritual study to be how we might perceive the eternal word of God reflected in every plant and insect, every bird and animal, every man and woman. St. Giles, namesake for the famous Edinburgh Cathedral, he's depicted holding his hand on his lap. And this saint has an arrow through his hand because a deer was being hunted by the king and his men. St. Giles took the arrow for the beast. There are also Highland prayers for the earth, the harvest, the home, blessings for the herd, pastures, smooth, long, spreading grassy meadows beneath your feet, the friendship of God bringing all of us home to earth. So you see, Scotland isn't all about clans. It's not all about haggis, revenge and wars, everything that you see in the movie Braveheart. It's not all about that. Yeah, it's some of it. Catherine, she read, I saw a few of you, Linda, you know, did you hear all the numbers there? Isn't that interesting? Yeah, Sue, right? These numbers, all about seven. And the year of the Jubilee, it celebrates the art of living. In that year of the Jubilee, if you can live that long or happen to be living at the time, the Hebrew people, they'd been taught to set sacred space aside every seventh day and every seventh year. Now, the seventh day, Saturday, Shabbat, the Sabbath, would be a day of rest and worship for human beings. While the seventh year, this would be a year to let the earth rest. And then after the seven cycles, seven of these, seven times seven, that's 49, on the occasion of the next year, the 50th year, there would be a jubilee. A celebration of the earth, the sky, the water, of all creation given to the people of God. While the focus would be celebratory, this would also be a time of retreat and rest and reflection and contemplation. The ancient rituals of the Hebrew people, they're reminders of God's intention for us to recognize that the earth is sacred, and likewise to recognize the holiness of every single human being. This in turn should help us challenge to nurture that relationship with earth, and likewise nurture relationships with one another. One author says, nature, of course, nature is the art of God. When we feel a mountain, we feel a sense of its glory and majesty. We feel an immensity for life. When we feel a desert, we acknowledge the dryness and the fragility of life. When we feel a canyon, we perceive the abyss and the depth and the depression of life. These are temples of the spirit sculpted by the supreme artist over time and continuing to affect the human perspective. So, consider the rivers. Consider the rapids. Consider the carving of the land. Stones, rocks, mud, gravel, clouds, shapes, pictures in the sky. Well, we just heard a song, consider the colors of the wind. And what is the color of the wind, by the way? I don't know it. Have you seen its colors? Anybody see the colors? What is it, Lowell? All colors combined. That sounds beautiful. A rainbow of colors. And does that color change when we have wind? And boy, it was a windy week last week. I think of Georgia O'Keeffe. Our daughter spent time at the Ghost Ranch New Mexico. And Georgia O'Keeffe said once, nobody sees a flower, really. It's so small, we don't have time. And to see, it takes time, like having a friend takes time. The Buddhists would invite us to embed ourselves deep into the world to discover the color of the wind. We would sit quietly, close our eyes, paying close attention to our bodies, and then wait for the wind, feel it, taste it, smell it, imagine where it came from, where it's going, its purpose. And then in the mind's eye, gradually it can take shape and form, color can appear. This is a way of climbing into nature and becoming a part of it, which we are anyway, though all the distractions of the world try to tell us otherwise. But that doesn't change the truth. We are a part of nature. Nature is a part of us. And while nature can survive without us, we cannot survive without nature. Back in 1972, my college friends and I, we made our first journey, or actually it was my first journey, to a little town in this area. It's called Traverse City. It was at the beginning of a new college semester. We wanted to get back to nature, so we chose northern Michigan. We skied at a place, I think they're trying to reopen it now, but it was in active service at the time. Yeah, Sugarloaf Mountain, Sugarloaf. We enjoyed meals in the area. We walked around the area. It was just so open. We talked about the glorious beauty of our fair state. And then in the spring, nature called us to the north once again. So we camped in the great outdoors. We visited the sand dunes. And, of course, we checked on a few local night spots. But maybe because we were students distracted by other pleasures, but I just don't remember crowds anywhere. I just don't remember. 1972. And there didn't seem to be congested traffic either in the winter or the spring. And now, 45 years later, in Traverse City, anticipating the hot summer months with traffic jams and packed festivals, long lines and crowds, what's become of this fine, quaint town, a treasure for those nature lovers, as well as for those wishing to escape the crowded city life there in Detroit or in Chicago? What's become of it? Economist John Maynard Keynes is one of these. He had a speech, and he referred to something called the paradox of the aggregate. The paradox of the aggregate. I have to hold my breath in when I speak, but I get so anxious because it's a very windy time. And this is what he said. As nations prosper and their standard of living rises, what is desirable for the individual turns into something intolerable for the aggregate. In other words, what was once a glorious winter and spring in that Traverse City environmental wonderland, a quiet artistic village tucked gently under the west and east bays, has now become cluttered with fudgies and fuel. This beautiful out-of-the-way Lake Michigan nature retreat area has been taken over by affluent families as well as close-to-retirement ministers and nurses, from Jackson, Michigan. Cain said, "The things we can afford lose their value simply because the numbers taking advantage of them cancel out the pleasure. In an impoverished society, no one can enjoy luxuries. In an affluent one, the very affluence destroys the exclusivity of pleasures and possessions. Some say the world will end in fire, some say in ice." Well, here in Cadillac, there's a recreational vehicle camper park located between two lakes. What are the names of those lakes again? Mitchell and Cadillac. Do you know the park? Last summer, I think you do, last summer we had a chance to enjoy a cookout with friends next to their large RV. I was shocked by the density of population in that tiny park designed for those who want to get back to nature. That little strip of water between Lake Mitchell and Lake Cadillac was packed with people and rowboats, water skis and motorboats and pontoons colliding into each other. And having beverages. And it was the craziest thing to witness. About 3 hours in the afternoon. And in the winter, when everybody can afford to go skiing, the lines at the lifts, they get longer and everybody enjoys the experience less because they're spending half of their time waiting. Now, you want real waiting? I guess go to Florida. Sorry, Pat. Theodore Hybert, in his book, The Yahwist's Landscape, challenges former assumptions about the second chapter of Genesis. Hybert argues that Genesis actually focused on the relationship between people and their environment. The Hebrew word Adam derives from the Hebrew word Adama, meaning ground. The Yahwist writer, therefore, was probably talking about Adam, Adam, being made of arable topsoil. And when God places Adam in the garden, Adam's first job is to till and to keep the garden, to cultivate the land. And so the earliest story in our Bible actually reminds us that we descend from farmers, that we are farmers. And that's what we were made to do in the world. Hybert concludes that the Yahwist writer and his original audience were village farmers. They were not desert nomads, as had originally been suggested. And therefore, Genesis is a biblical book which can help us to think in new ways about our relationship with the earth. From the beginning, God created us to be farmers and stewards and caretakers of our land. And consider Jesus and his teaching vehicle, parables. Many of these are nature lessons that align with human behavior. From his parable of the simple mustard seed faith to his parable about the seeds scattered on the walk, in the weeds and in the good soil, the healthy soil, lessons about the birds of the air which do not worry and the creatures of the earth which live full and productive lives without amassing wealth in storehouses, to the foundation parable, building homes on solid ground. Jesus taught the people on the mount, by the lake, on the plain. While he attended temple worship in the early days, his teaching ministry generally took place outside in the open air. By his example, the entire ministry of Jesus seemed to be to blend doing the right thing with being stewards of the earth on which we live. Because treating others with love and respect matches treating the earth with love and respect. By doing the right thing, caring for the earth as we care for each other, God provides blessing and pronounces creation very good. Amen.